Daniel 7, 13 through 22. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever and ever. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke into pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. And then about the 10 horns that were in its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which 3 of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things and that seemed greater than its companions. And as I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them until the Ancient of Days came. And judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. Don't forget to say that.
Okay. Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 to 12. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Now, Sharon, I hope that you don't mind, but I'm sharing your weakness. Sharon has a hard time reading and being up front. You notice that she always takes a back seat to what we're doing. You don't have to be here for this.
Well, you did a great job.
You don't have to be here for this. And she's reading scripture, though only a few verses tonight. She's one of 3 that's reading scriptures at the Ascension service. And she just wanted to practice being in front of people. I sort of told her when she said yes, because she told me, you know, she really has a hard time being. I said, picture all the church people in their underwear. Church people.
Don't do that.
All right. I just recorded that. All right. Sharon, thank you. All right. So be praying for her. She is going to read, but she won't have to stand up in front, which is a good thing. That part has been relieved from her for that evening, but she'll read right where she's sitting. There's 3 verses, and when she's called upon, she'll read. We've been going through the Sermon on the Mount. Remember the first couple of verses? Those who are poor, those who mourn, and those who are weak are people. They're actually people. Those are people who are poor. Those who are mourning are those who have lack resources. The meek are just the powerless. I believe the power of those verses makes us also understand that those are people, actual people. That doesn't mean it doesn't apply to everybody, but somehow we are to see that Jesus is talking to that crowd of misfits, the sick, the affirmed, those who are on the outside, those who are despised from society, and he starts off the Beatitudes I believe, with them. And then he turns it and he says, blessed are those who are thirsty and hunger after justice, after righteousness. I think that's the context, is justice. They're thirsting after it. And that is, if you will, the character of the people who are being invited into this kingdom. And then we have those who are merciful. Because in a day when the world around everybody, only those who had power, who had affluence, who came from the right family, that's where mercy happened. It never went down low to those who are left behind, those who are on the bottom. That's how it worked. But Jesus said, in my kingdom, blessed are those who are merciful, for you will receive mercy. And then it's blessed are those who are pure in heart. And I translated that last week as clean in heart, because that's actually the word, because we are faced in that culture with the difference between clean and unclean people. And we talked about that last week, about how if you're clean in heart, you have an embrace of those who are not clean. And I think that's the power of that verse. And then we have, blessed are the peacemakers. We like peacemakers as long as we don't have to do it sometimes, because we want to take back our territory. We want to strike back, right? But I get it. Jesus wants me to be a peacemaker. I can handle that. Can you imagine just for a second that you're out on that mountain, and you're basically in the crowd of people who are not welcomed in most households in that community? All right? You're part of those who are on the outside. And you're hearing this and you're going, my goodness gracious, this kingdom is for me. This kingdom is for me. I feel invited. Now, if you're rich and affluent, you might be apprehensive. But if you're following Jesus, if you're following after him, if you have been listening to him, you might realize that this is God turning everything upside down. So even this invitation is for the rich as well, and the powerful as well. And so you have your eyes closed and you say, yes, blessed are the peacemakers, because they'll be sons of God. I like that. Every female should never, ever wonder why the Bible doesn't say daughters of God. It'd be okay. I'll tell you why. Because in a culture where only sons get everything, you want to be a son. So it's a blessing. Even if you're a female, claim it, because that means you get God's kingdom. You get everything he has for you. All right? Also, a little spin on something I'll teach at another time. Sons of God have this idea of royalty, kingship. So we like the idea of being kings. And, you know, I understand that queens would prefer being queens rather than kings. But you get the idea, right? And so you're just so, I love this. I love this. Blessed are the peacemakers. But Jesus goes on and he says, blessed are those who are persecuted. Whoa, hold on. Hold on here. Poor, mourning, meek, thirsty and hungry, merciful, pure, clean, peacemaker. Yeah. What do you mean persecuted? Blessed are those who are persecuted. That should come as a little bit of a shock. And we're going to talk about why I believe that they are in there. Can't we just stop at peacemakers? Sons of God sounds pretty good. But we have now the last two blesseds, and they are, blessed are those who are persecuted, and blessed are those who receive some pushback, okay? All right, Jesus' invitation does not merely challenge the bloodshed of revolution. Jesus didn't get up there to tell all these misfits, let's get a revolution going, because the only kind of revolution they would have known is by taking by force those things that are being denied them. That's how people usually do it, all right? And Jesus is obviously saying that this is not the way his revolution is going to happen. Now, I'm going to fast forward just to let you know. The revolution happens at that table. It happens around those original tables where the poor and the rich, the sick and the healthy, the doctor and the beggar. You got the picture sitting around that table. It took a while. It took a while for it to sink in, but that was how Jesus took over an empire. That is what happened. And so the way to endure all this is to respond well to people who revile against you, revile against the invitation to be poor, revile the invitation to mourn, to be meek, to be thirsty for justice, to be merciful, to be clean of heart, to be peacemakers. People are going to push back against that. It is crazy, but there's people who are going to push back because it robs them of their power. You've heard me say this before, and if you respond to something negative with anger, you've just given up power. Because now that person forever knows if they push right there, they got you. Right? So even at that level, we understand that how we respond to things gives people power over us. And it's a hard lesson to learn. I mean, I have fought people twice my size in my head a lot. All right? If you, Maxine's probably one of the few, but maybe my wife. When I drive, I pounce on anybody who does something wrong on a road. You know, if they were in my car, I'd tell them. You know? So it's still my heart, but I do know how that the Christian life is to respond. And people in power don't always like that. People don't like to be in these categories. Okay? Go ahead, John. And so we exist at a time today in this world, in our world, where the Beatitudes are almost like, yeah, if everybody just followed these, life would be pretty good. So there is a sense that in our culture today, because everyone kind of likes these things, the radicalness of the Beatitudes is taken away. Go ahead, John. The radicalness of all these are taken away. So the intent of the blesseds, if I can say that, the intent of the blesseds are tempered. They're watered down. The edge is taken off. The bite is gone. Because everybody believes blessed are the poor. Everybody kind of likes blessed are the mourn. And there's a whole host of people that do appreciate peacemakers. But you got to understand there's a bite being taken out. So they're radical. The Beatitudes, radical self-righteousness slaying. Christendom, that's the world around us. Destroying, idol bashing, social leveling, culture reversing power is dismissed. Everything about them is now just leveled out. And that takes away the bite. That takes away the power. That takes away what is happening here. Okay, go ahead, John. Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through about 12 there, is the most referred to quoted text of the New Testament for the first 150 years. More people quoted these verses, used these verses, referred to these verses than any other verses in the New Testament. That doesn't mean that we have grading. You have to understand. But you have to understand in the first 150 years, these verses, if you will, go ahead. These verses were the invitation to the faith. This was the gospel being preached. But it was also the test of the faithful. How did I know? How would you know if someone's really a Christian? How would you really know? Now, I know we don't like to judge people. I know that. You know me. I'm the type that my personality, I'm kind of accepting. I'm an acceptor. I understand that. We all know that Christians shouldn't be judging one another. But we all ask that question. How do we really know Mama's a Christian? How do we really know Buster's a Christian? How do we really know Pastor's a Christian? Everybody asks those questions. You don't want to be judging. But you all know that there are certain characteristics that make a Christian. We also know that Christians aren't perfect, and for those who are indeed in the faith, we already know that Mama, Buster, and Pastor are going to fail. We already know that. And so are they quick to forgive? Are they quick to turn around and ask God to work again in their lives? Those are all characteristics we kind of expect, right? And so they were the invitation to the faith. They were the test of the faithful. These Beatitudes were also the bane and annoyance of those who are in power. All right? I'm wondering how much of what we believe actually bothers people. All right? Really? All right? You want to know how Christianity spread so rapidly and the church increased beyond imagination in the first 150 years? It's because they actually believed the Beatitudes. They actually believed these set of blesseds. Go ahead, John. The early believers were scarce. They lacked resources. They were small, often hidden. They lived the life that the Beatitudes describe. They endured attacks against living out the message. And as a result, catch this, the church outlived the empire. I don't know about you, but I'm sure you've heard this before. We're at the end of America, right? You've heard that before. We probably heard that as kids. We're at the end of America. America's coming to an end, right? What we know of America is about done. We've heard this both in and outside the church all the time. I have no idea when the grand experiment called America is going to be done. All right? There are certain presidents I like and don't like. They come and go. Politicians seem to come and go. Shifts in power seem to come and go. I have no idea how long this country is going to last. But I do know one thing. The church, the real church, the Beatitude church, is going to outlive America. Just like it outlived the Roman Empire. Like it outlived the Russian Empire. Just like it outlived the English Empire. Just like it outlived the German Empire. And I'm telling you right now, if you went to China, you'd be thinking the church is going to even outlive a billion people living in China. And so something about the Beatitudes empower the church, right? Okay, there. The nine Beatitudes, I call them the blessings, all right? They present true human flourishing. If you want to know from God's perspective, if someone says, what does flourishing look like? Do we point to the hill? Do we point to the suburbs up in Trumbull and Prospect Avenue Street over there on the other side? Is that where we point to say that's flourishing? Everybody has something in their mind of what flourishing looks like, and it's usually a comparison, right? Okay? But I'm going to tell you right now, as a Christian, you can say, I know what flourishing is. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Come on, people. The powerless don't inherit nothing, let alone the earth. But that's how God sees flourishing. So human flourishing is this. And the church, though it's waiting for the kingdom to come fully, believes that this is the way that God causes his people to flourish. Okay, John. All right. The Beatitudes are bookended by the kingdom. The start, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then at the end, it will say, blessed are those who are persecuted, right? For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And John, go ahead and show this. So you can kind of see these are all the blessings. And see how it starts with the kingdom and it ends with the kingdom. So what's it about, people? This is about God's kingdom. Remember that rule I taught you? The big word, hermeneutics. That's the big word for the study of the scriptures. All right? So here's a nice rule again for those who are new among us. All right? If you see something repeated, that's probably something that we should pay attention to. But I think it's more than just pay attention to at this point. Go ahead, John. Watch this. We got Matthew chapter 3, verse 2. John the Baptist says, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Okay? And then a little later, after Jesus is introduced, he says, from that time, Jesus began to preach, saying, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And then, as a summary of what Jesus was doing, he went throughout all Galilee, teaching in the synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction among them. So up to this point, up to the Beatitudes, what's the central theme? Something about the kingdom is happening. So we know that this is a picture. This is an illustration, a living parable, a description of the kingdom. Okay, now, verse 10 and 11 have two separate sets of blessed are those who are persecuted, those who are reviled, okay? And but the Beatitudes sort of actually stop at verse 10. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Because if you notice that all the Beatitudes are third person. I'm giving a little English lesson here. Third person. All right? Blessed are the poor. What person is that in English grammar? That's third person, right? Blessed are those who mourn. Who is that? Third person. This is an English lesson. And it could be a Greek lesson too. All right? It's the same thing. In language, this is instead of you personally or me personally, we're talking about them, those out there, okay? And so all of a sudden, verse 10 pivots in verse 11 to second person plural. Blessed are you. All of a sudden, it's not just this gigantic invitation to the kingdom. Now he's drilling it down to you and me. Now he's going to pivot because, go ahead, John, because in a few seconds, he's going to say, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And just in case you don't know what this light is, it's, according to Jesus, a city set in the hill. No, it's on a hill. We know this, right? Okay. Just a little aside. I'm slowly learning how we all got the nickname or the designation, the hill. And at the very beginning, it wasn't a negative. It has become a negative, which is a shame, right? But at the beginning, what happened was, is you know where Trowbridge Square Park is? That's where the trolleys were. That's where the distribution, you can go downtown, and you literally had to go down into the town. You had to cross that little ravine and go downtown, or you went up to West Haven, okay? And if you drilled underneath the sidewalks over there at Trowbridge, you would actually find the old tracks that are down there, all right? And so when someone was downtown in the New Haven proper area, they went up the hill, and slowly that became the hill to go to this part of the town. So even though there's no hill, they had to go up over, you know, they understand, okay? And so that's how we got the hill. So I love the fact that it says city on a hill because it seems to fit us just fine, right? Okay? Okay, the last of the Beatitudes, I believe, are a check. They are a check on our motives. It reveals the content of our character and reminds us of the necessity of endurance. Blessed, go ahead, John, put those up. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. See, suffering is coming. Suffering is part of the kingdom. Jesus goes to a cross, so we follow Jesus and take up our cross, right? That's what it says, all right? Blessed are you who, when others revile you and persecute you. So this is part of us. But I believe there's something happening here that we can be thankful for as we take a look at why in the world would persecution, suffering, actually be part of this flourishing. Well, first off, I'm not going to say much of this, but think about it. All the descriptions, poor, meek, mourning, right? This is a reversal of, those aren't the ones that are blessed in our culture, right? Blessed are the educated. Blessed are those who have money. Blessed are those who have a good house to live in, right? Right? Not blessed are the poor. Blessed are the mourning. Blessed are the meek. That it's a reverse. So we could almost understand, blessed are those who are persecuted, because that is a total reversal. All right? Okay, go ahead. The first thing, it's a check on our motives for accepting the invitation. All right? Go ahead, John. All I can think of is, wow. All right? I want the kingdom. I don't know about you. Do you want the kingdom? That kingdom sounds good to me. I would like comforting. Everybody here likes to be comforted. All right? You guys, that's a good part. I love being comforted. I like the idea of inheriting the earth because I know how to use it. All right? I wish I had the earth now. All right? I understand I'll get it, but I do got to share it with y'all. But inheriting the earth sounds like a big deal, right? I can go for that. I'm all for justice. How many here are for injustice? Nobody's here for injustice. I'm for justice, okay? I like receiving mercy. Here, who does not like receiving mercy? Don't you like getting mercy? Doesn't matter what it is. You just know that mercy is a good thing. All right? I have written up there, seeing God is on my bucket list. I would think it would be on your bucket list too, right? All right? You know what a bucket list is? Everything you get to do before you die, right? I know the tendency in Christian faith is when you die, you get to see God. But I would prefer to see him before I die. So it's in my bucket. All right? All right? Okay? All right? And I like being called a child of God, son of God. And I already told you, ladies, please grab a hold of this. There's nothing wrong with this. In that culture, to be told as a female that you're a son of God, you would have gone, oh yeah, I'm going to rule. I get it all. And that's good. So don't misunderstand the Bible when it says sons. It doesn't mean just child. It doesn't mean sons and daughters. It means sons. Because in that culture, sons get it all. You want that designation. It's a good designation. I know we can say children of God, child of God, and that's fine. But know it, that you're a son. That means you're royalty. You're the top of the heap, okay? That's a good, I like that. I like that very much. Because sons of God, they get everything. But wait, I did not sign up for being persecuted. I knew there was a catch. You all know that? You all see the good deals out there in life, right? You all thinking, there's got to be a catch. You get that phone call, I've got a great deal for you. And you're thinking, there's a catch, right? Someone says, I got a car for you. I got a funds for you. I got a prize for you. You know, there's always, it seems to be a catch. Whenever there's no strings, everyone thinks that's unusual, all right? So here it is, you know, blessed are those who are persecuted. I knew there had to be a catch here. But we need to see that this is a good thing. This is not a bad thing. Now, I don't want to suffer any more than the next person. I guarantee you, I probably want to suffer less than everybody else. All right? Dying for Christ is fine with me. Suffering slowly but surely is not so good to me. All right? I am not into pain. All right? The only part of my body that I believe is really built for pain is my teeth. When I was a young guy, they never used Novocaine. They never used Novocaine on me, and I never had a problem. For some reason, that pain I could handle, right? I could handle that pain. In fact, when I was in the Air Force, one time when I was in the Air Force, I get free dental, right? So you go in to get your teeth done. And the guy's going to work on a cavity that's here, right? And he also pulls out this needle. I said, what are you doing? He says, oh, well, I'm going to shoot it with Novocaine. I said, no, you're not. He said, you sure? And I said, yeah, you're going to do a good job. They always think the Novocaine is to cover up that they don't do a great job, right? So I told him, you're doing a good job. I didn't tell him that it doesn't bother me. You know, I just thought it was more appropriate to tell him to do a good job. But that's the only part. Every other part, I'm telling you right now, I do not like pain. You know, I do not like pain. I don't know too many. Everyone has different levels of tolerance of pain, but no one says, I want to have pain, right? Suffering for Jesus is tough, but it is a good thing. I want to let you know right now, there is no self-righteousness in the Beatitudes. There's nothing in those Beatitudes that will hold me and make me think better of myself than I am. That's a good thing. And even after reading the Beatitudes, it's not about you still. It's not about you. The Beatitudes are not a platform, if you will. They're not a platform for me to gain some platform of fame or celebrity. I'm going to tell you right now, you check me. When we have 100 people coming to our church, and you all know that will be a mega church in the hill, right? Okay? You make sure you check me that I don't go, now I'm going to be a speaker someplace. Because look what I did. You, Pastor, no, that's not why you're here. You just remind me, my platform isn't my ministry. My platform isn't getting the Beatitudes right. Right? But it's not yours either. It's not yours. Oh, I believe that. The Beatitudes. I lived. You understand? That's not for you. The Beatitudes are there to remind us of who we are. But it also helps us. Go ahead to the next one. All right. I missed it there. Right? Yep, I'm good. All right, the next one is, to whom does the disciple belong? I think these Beatitudes tell us who the disciples belong to. All right? If you just put the verses back up for me real quick, John. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account, on Jesus' account. So you know you belong to him. He's the one that you belong to. Then it says, rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great. Where? In heaven. That's just not some pie in the sky place. That's where God is. That's God's perfect place. And that's who we belong to. We belong to Jesus, and we belong in heaven. That's ours. And so these verses point out, and they affirm and they reaffirm to whom we belong, to whom we belong. And I believe we need to see it as to who the church belongs to, because in a few seconds he's going to tell us that we are a city on a hill, which is the church. You are not a city on a hill. We are a city on a hill. The church is. And so we belong to God. Now, there's an interesting spin on this text, but I get it from Luke's version, okay? In Luke's version, it says, blessed are you, the same thing that Matthew says about Jesus in Matthew. But Luke says, blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you and revile you and spurn your name as evil on account of, instead of me, which is the way, go ahead, John, which is the way the Matthew has it, me, Jesus. It says, on account of the Son of Man. All right? And I think this is really important to us, okay? Notice that in Matthew, it says on my account. And in Luke, it says on account of the Son of Man. It's the same thing. Jesus is the Son of Man. In fact, it's his favorite title for himself. He rarely calls himself Son of God. He calls himself Son of Man. And you got to understand, Son of Man isn't just talking about his humanity, that he's man. He is this man whom Daniel sees riding on a cloud, coming on the clouds of heaven to judge the earth, to receive a kingdom. That's the Son of Man. So Son of Man is a big term, okay? It's a great term. And Jesus is that. Now, Rick read this for us in Daniel chapter 7. I saw in the night visions, one like the Son of Man was coming. And behold, on the clouds of heaven, there came one who we call the Son of Man. Notice that title is there. So when Jesus said, on account of the Son of Man, he's referring to that Son of Man from Daniel. All right? And then he gets what in this case? A kingdom, right? He gets a kingdom that does not end ever. And you can see that in this text. But then Daniel says, okay. He goes, I know there's a catch. All right? Go ahead, John. He knows there's a catch in this. There's a twist. Because one like the Son of Man, that is a good thing. But we got to deal with God's people down here. How's that work out? Notice here, Daniel is asking the angel who is bringing him this message. He's asking them, so what is the interpretation? How do I read this? And basically what he says is that the world is going to be against all the people of God. But in the end, the saints of the Most High shall receive what? A kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever. But the prophecy is the Son of Man is going to get the kingdom. The Son of Man is going to get a kingdom that lasts forever. But the interpretation is that the people of God are going to be persecuted. But in the end, they are going to get the kingdom. Go ahead, John. They are going to get the kingdom. And as I looked, the horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given for the saints and the Most High. And the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. Now do you understand why Jesus starts with blessed are the poor? Because theirs is what? The kingdom. How does Jesus know that? Now, obviously, I do believe Jesus knows all things. I believe he's God. All right? But he doesn't invent things. He's pulling from the Old Testament because he knows that the people of God are going to be just like him. He's going to die on a cross, but he's going to be resurrected and ascended to the Father to get a kingdom forever and ever and ever. And so will the people of God. They will suffer the cross. They will suffer, but in the end, they will get the kingdom because it's theirs. Go ahead. And so I believe that tells us who we belong to. We belong to Jesus. He gets the kingdom, but he has to go to a cross. And so we understand as God's people, we too must suffer in this world, but we get the kingdom. All right. Number four, the reward is in heaven, parallel to the check on motive. This is sort of like a check on the motive part. What's very interesting is in verses 11 and 12, it says, blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Now, notice that we're in the right. We're not doing anything wrong. In fact, we are here to help people, right? The church has always been here to help people, but we're the ones that get in trouble. We're the ones who get jailed. We're the ones who get beaten. We're the ones who get looked down upon. All right? So we have that. But you have to look at verse 12. Rejoice and be glad. Now that's crazy. Because I don't know about you, but I have a hard time rejoice in suffering. That's a little bit beyond me. That is not in my bucket list. All right? But at the same time, I have to ask the question, do I really believe this? Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Do I really, really believe? Go ahead, John. Do I really, really, really believe there is a heaven to be had? Do I really believe that? All right? I'm going to tell you right now that believing there is a heaven should change your life here. It should not give the rich an excuse that says, well, you know, the poor will have heaven. That's wrong. That's not justice. So if I was in another church talking to another group of people, it's the same message, but it would be applied differently. But to us, to those who live here in the hill, I'm asking, do we really, really believe that we get heaven after all this is over? I don't know about you, but I have a hard time with other people all the time. Right? How am I going to handle persecution when I have a hard time with John? You know what I'm saying? John's driving me nuts. All right? And he's my brother. Okay? And then there are plenty of people who just don't get it. And they are like really annoying to me. If I can't handle them, how am I going to handle persecution? How am I going to handle it when they lock me up? It doesn't look like they'll do that today, but you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. Right now, there are more Christians being persecuted on the earth for being Christians than at any other time in history. There are countries that make it illegal for us to meet, illegal for you to share your faith, illegal to even be a Christian. In China, you have to belong to a registered church because the government then gets to control it. But the fastest growing church on the planet is that hidden, underground, home-centered church in China. Nice. Millions, millions of people.
Yeah,
well, just, that's where we're going. By the way, persecution starts, you go to Stephen Street. All right. But think about it. If we have a hard time with life now, what's going to happen when things get bad? Not bad in terms of worse than things are now. Things can be pretty bad and hard for people and messy for people on the hill. I totally get that. But what happens when things get bad, not just because of that, but because we confess Christ? All right? And I think we need to see that being those who really believe in heaven, it should change us now. It should change how we prioritize. It should change how we love one another. It should change how we put up with things. All right? Do not read that I think we should put up with injustice. I think the church should be on the front lines of speaking on behalf of those who are not hurt. Right? But think about that too. That means we need to be in places where harm could come. All right? Because we actually believe there is a heaven to be gained. All right? All right. The same as the prophets. This little last line is very interesting. You got to kind of go back to that imagining. Jesus is preaching, and the majority of the crowd that's in front of him, of course, his disciples are there. And the disciples are not, you know, men of excellence. They're probably older teenagers. How old are you, young man?
13.
How much?
13.
I'm going to tell you right now, the disciples were not too much older than this young man right here. All right? And so in that culture, that was manhood for sure. But still, hadn't lived a long time. But so we have some disciples. And Matthew and Judas were probably the oldest ones. Okay? Because of their professions and who they were before they were disciples. But most of them were just young people. But the crowds out there were what? They were the people that were deformed, sick, poor, marginalized, oppressed, mentally unstable. Right? That's the group. Okay? And for them to be told that they will suffer persecution like the prophets, that had to be a raise. That was a raise. No one's paying attention to me now. No one's paying attention to me now. I am sick. I'm deformed. I'm poor. I'm out in the middle of nowhere living that subsistence life, but I'm going to be persecuted like the prophets. That had to be a raise just thinking about it. Okay? We turn to 2 Chronicles just to give you a taste, verse 36, 16. But they kept mocking the messengers. They kept mocking the messengers of God, despising his words, the messengers' words, and scoffing at his prophets until the wrath of the Lord rose against his people until there was no remedy. You see, the people of Israel didn't listen to the prophets. So we kind of have to expect they're not going to listen to us. Now, I will grant that we have a failed, failed is not the right word. We have a tempered message because we're not perfect. We're not perfect, right? And I grant you that when we witness for Christ in this world, when we witness for Christ in this world, there's a good chance people are going to see first our failures. And so on. But you know what? Actually, that's why we testify. Is because we can't do this. We have a Savior who is bigger, better, more forgiving, and more powerful than I could ever be. That's what I need. That's what you need too. That's what you need too. That's our testimony. But those that like power, those who are against these things that crucify who we are, they're not going to like you for it. They're not going to like you for it any more than they like Christ for it. And so the messenger will be persecuted. But it's a raise, my good friends. It's a raise. Because some of us don't even get close to being a prophet. But I'm going to get persecuted like the prophets. I kind of like that. All right? I understand that. That lifts me up. Go ahead, John. The last two remaining blessings in our Beatitudes are very significant. No, I need that back. Sorry, I didn't know you were there. One, they actually keep the open invitation from fakers. Now, I live in a culture, the Hill, that is fast to point out a faker. I'm telling you, I've never been around people who are so quick to know who a faker is. All right? And that's good for me. That is good for me. All right? Granted, I come from a different culture and a different background. We are not taught how to... See, we just stay away from all the... We make the fakers live someplace else. Not in the suburbs, right? You all know they fakers, right? Right? Okay. Right? Okay. But you know what I'm saying? It's just that we live in a culture in the Hill that is quick to identify those who aren't sincere. Now, hopefully it will wash back on us. I need to be not a faker, and I need to be sincere when I'm doing that, right? But don't you want something in the Beatitudes to keep fakers out? Because some of the stuff in the Beatitudes are pretty cool. They get a kingdom, they get the earth, they get mercy, they get to be called a son of God. Those are cool things for some people. I would prefer God putting those last verses in. Blessed are those who are persecuted, because it will keep out the fakers. Because you know what happens when persecution comes to fakers? They out.
They bail.
They bail. Just like in our lives. You know a faker because they bail, right? When things get tough, they bail. And so in some sense, we want this. Now, that's a check on us and our motives. Make sure our motives are good too. But we want that. The last two, keep the line at the door short. If I could promise that everybody who came into 158 would receive the $1.6 billion lotto that just happened, that line would be out there, right? If I could guarantee it, right? But if I told them you have to die before you get to spend the money, that would do what to that line? I hope my microphone picked that up. That was good. All right. You all know that the line would just go away. Right? Because people just don't want to die for $1.6 billion because I want to live with that money, not die to get it. All right, so we can understand why blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are those when people revile us and don't like us because of Christ, not because of our stupid, idiotic personalities. All right, plenty of us can get in trouble for our own personalities. But that, okay, thank you very much. We got honest people here. All right, I believe at CPC in the Hill, we believe in confession. All right. But we do that. We know there's a difference between my personality that grades up against John or someone else that's not a Christian in town. They just don't like me because of my personality. I can't imagine that. But something about my personality, I'm sure, rubs someone the wrong way. That's not persecution, people. Me loving on that person who hates me, that's what people are going to have problems with. All right? And so I think that we are like what Jesus is going to say. We should be glad that the way through the gate is narrow. We got to want that. We want that. Keep out the fakers. Keep out the people who really don't want the real thing, but they like all the blessings that come with it. Go ahead, John. To keep our motives for following Jesus and being a family member of the church and a citizen of the kingdom in check. I think that this tests our belief. This tests our belief. Do we really believe this stuff? That's the part. Because how many here like having the kingdom? Okay? How many here like being called Son of God? And you know what that means? That means you get everything. All right? Just, ladies, please be patient with that term. That's a good term. In that culture, you would have never been called a son. And you want that. That is what you want, because it doesn't mean gender in that case, because that was the problem back then. All right? You can turn it in your head, child, if you want, but really that term means royalty, and you get that. How many want that? How many want to be top dog? How many want mercy because you know you can't get through life without mercy? All right? How many who are meek? I'm going to tell you right now, we're in a meek build. We do not have all the resources to get through life. We know this. How many want the earth? Because if you're meek, you get the earth. You get to inherit the earth. See, all the blessings are good. Do not raise your hands. How many here would prefer not being persecuted for all those benefits? I think we would all say all of us would prefer it. But to really truly believe that we have a heaven waiting for us and we get all this, that's going to motivate us. That's going to move us to be not only better people, but to make sure our community receives blessing. That we will sacrifice on behalf of those around us. We're going to sacrifice for our kids and our next door neighbor's kids. Because we believe it's all true. We believe it's all true. And in the end, if they persecute us for it, it's because they don't like their power being taken away. Jesus was stealing their power going to that cross. He was stealing their power. It didn't look like it. Didn't feel like it. So when we get persecuted for being Christians, we are stealing people's power from them. And that's okay. That's all right. All right. See how these two last Beatitudes work out? We want them. We don't like them, but we want them. We want to have, blessed are those who are persecuted. We need those. And next week, when we take a look at, you are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world, and you are the city on a hill, you're going to see why this is really important, because we're going to be advertising the benefits of Christ to everybody. We're going to be the salt that preserves, that protects and flavors. We're going to be the light that shines so people can see. And we're going to be that city. And we're going to pun that city all to pieces because we are the hill. All right? Nothing wrong with that. These verses right here are for us. And I think they are a blessing, even though it doesn't seem like it. We need to rejoice in them. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much. No one in this room wants to be persecuted for anything, let alone for being a Christian. But we want to learn to rejoice and be glad because our reward is in heaven and we get the kingdom. The kingdom is already ours. We don't just get the kingdom. It is already ours because you've already passed judgment on all of our enemies, both invisible and visible, and have already given your people the kingdom. Help us, Father, to truly believe this. Help us to be the messengers that go out and share the benefits that are this great invitation called the Beatitudes. In Jesus' name, amen.